This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm David Green, in for Shumita Basu. Today, what to know about the tick-borne allergy spreading across the U.S. It is peak tick season, the stretch from April to September when tick activity spikes in huge swaths of the United States. Right now, according to the CDC, Americans are visiting emergency rooms for tick bites at the highest rate in nearly a decade. And the most rapidly spreading tick-borne illness in the country is something called alpha-gal syndrome. This is a condition that causes an often severe allergy to red meat and other animal products, and it's primarily spread by a particularly aggressive species called the Lone Star tick.
They will actively hunt people down.
That is New Yorker staff writer Burkhard Bilger. He recently reported on the rise of the Lone Star tick and alpha-gal syndrome.
There have been reports of them actually crawling down from the dune grasses and crossing the hot sand and getting onto beach blankets and biting people as they're sunbathing.
Lone Star ticks were once found mostly in the southeastern U.S., but they have been spreading, turning up as far west as Texas and as far north as Maine and Michigan. And wherever they go, they bring alpha-gal along with them. This syndrome can trigger a range of reactions after you eat meat or dairy, from hives and indigestion to full-on anaphylaxis. That is a life-threatening allergic response that roughly 60% of alpha-gal patients report having experienced. At least one death has been directly attributed to this allergy. Official estimates indicate about 500,000 people in the U.S. have alpha-gal syndrome, though some researchers say the true number is a lot higher. So I wanted to talk to Burkhard about what we know and don't know about alpha-gal, how it's impacting people's lives, and what, if anything, we can do about this. I feel like so many of us are really familiar with Lyme disease. That's the disease we always associated with ticks. But what is alpha-gal syndrome? What are the kind of the thumbnail basics of what this thing is?
I mean, it becomes a syndrome when your immune system has an allergic reaction to the sugar. The name comes from alpha-galactose. It's a sugar that's present in the bodies and the milk of all mammals except for primates. And so to the human body, it's a foreign sugar. And every Lone Star tick has alpha-gal in its saliva. And so when they bite you, it will always put it in your bloodstream. And then it's a question of how your body reacts to that. Some bodies react by flooding their system with antibodies to that sugar, that foreign sugar that's now in their blood. And some people get high levels of antibodies and have this terrible allergic reaction. And that allergic reaction in people is characterized by, you know, it's when you eat meat or you drink milk or some kind of dairy product or eat some kind of dairy product that has this alpha-gal sugar in it. And if your body reacts to it, then you can have stomach knotted, you can have hives, rashes, shortness of breath, your tongue and your throat can swell up. You can have full anaphylactic shock. You know, there have been people who've died from this. One of the tricky things about this is that because alpha-gal is kind of often wrapped up in fats or in ligaments and other connective tissue, it takes a while for the body to digest. And so often you'll eat a steak at 7 in the evening, 8 in the evening, and you won't feel any symptoms of the allergy until 3 in the morning. And so people often don't make the connection. It can be mistaken for lots of things. And the interesting thing is that why are we reacting to it in our blood from when a tick bites us? And that's still somewhat of a mystery. A lot of people think there's a cofactor in the tick's saliva that somehow also triggers the immune system to react to the alpha-gal that's carried in that saliva.
But people say, like, it can give you a meat allergy. And I know, as you're telling us, we know relatively little about this. But we do know that, like, I'm hiking around, I get bitten by a Lone Star tick, whatever this sugar is that they put into my blood, my immune system can react in a way that will then, next time I eat meat, a burger, a steak, there's a good chance that I'm going to have an allergic reaction that I've never had before and potentially get very sick.
I mean, not a good chance. They haven't put a precise number of it, but it's probably in that range from between 0 and 10% or something of people who get the antibodies who then also have the allergic reaction.
Like, your odds are good that you get bitten by this tick and you're not necessarily going to get the syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is that the more tick bites you get, the higher your antibody levels are going to go and the more likely you are to develop allergic reaction. And this is the first couple of years where we're starting to track the number of alpha-gal cases nationwide. And when I looked at the numbers from Virginia since September, I mean, I think it was something like 14,000 cases of people who had their lab reports from their blood had shown antibody levels. So it's a lot of people.
Are we at a point where doctors are at least aware of this and know that it's a possibility? Like, you know, if I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'd had a delicious steak at dinner around 7 o'clock and I'm getting a hive or getting knots in my stomach and feeling terrible, like, is this thing prevalent enough that I should be going to a doctor and saying like, hey, could this be alpha-gal? Like, I've heard about this. Can we check that out, please?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think that's a thing to ask your doctor. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when it was not well recognized by doctors. And I think in 2017, they did a study. There was a paper about 100 cases of medical exams of people who were later found to have the syndrome. And only 1 in 10 were correctly diagnosed. And the median length to diagnosis for those people was 7 years.
Oh, my God.
And you think about those 7 years and people were getting told all kinds of things. I mean, I talked to one guy in Missouri, who'd had 3 heart surgeries based on misdiagnoses because they thought there was something wrong with his heart from how he's getting palpitations and so forth.
So what is the treatment? Is there a treatment for this, you know, if you get to a doctor and find out that this is what's going on?
Well, there's no cure, that's for sure. But there are like 3 or 4 ways to go if you know you have it. The most obvious thing is simply stop eating meat and drinking dairy. And if you do that religiously, there's a good chance 3 or 4 years later that you get to the point where your antibody levels have dropped enough that you can eat and drink animal products again. And the problem is that with that is that if you get bitten by a tick again in that time, your antibody levels will shoot back up.
Oh, and
They start all over again. And if you get bitten by multiple ticks, you can get to the point where you're sensitive to all kinds of things. And we can talk about that later. The other response is a drug called Xolair, X-O-L-A-I-R, which was developed for asthma reactions and then approved by the FDA for food allergies. And it seems to be pretty good at actually preventing serious reactions to meat and dairy. The problem is, one, it's expensive, so your insurance has to pay for it. Two, it's not really approved for constant use. I mean, some people use it and then go ahead and eat meat on a regular basis, and it's really not approved for that yet. So there may be some risk in that. But that seems to be very effective. The third response, which, you know, depending on how you feel about alternative medicine, acupuncture seems to be a very effective for some people. And acupuncture, you know, it's a treatment that's actually been proven by a lot of studies. It's one of the alternative therapies that's been the most well-studied and effective.
I want to talk a little bit about the Lone Star tick. What makes this tick particularly insidious and evil?
It's just a really aggressive tick. Holly Gaff at Old Dominion University, who's studied them for a long time, called them like the bullies of the...
Bullies in the tick world, the tick playground.
Bullies in the ticks world, yeah. They're all the ones who kind of beat you up and take your lunch money, as he says. And they really are. I mean, most ticks, they do what's called questing, which is they crawl out onto a leaf and they stretch out their limbs and they wait for someone to go by. And Lone Stars will do that too. But Lone Stars will go a step further and they'll actually hunt people down. I mean, they will actively go out and follow the trail of heat and carbon dioxide and latch onto a host, could be us, could be a mouse, could be a deer, and get their blood meal, as it's called. So they're very aggressive. They're very resilient. They seem to be, I think, better at heat resistance than a lot of ticks. So they can actually spend time out in the open longer. And there have been reports in like in Martha's Vineyard and other places of them actually crawling down from the dune grasses and crossing the hot sand and getting onto beach blankets and biting people as they're sunbathing. You know, it's a kind of tick that doesn't wait around. It goes to where the blood is.
Well, you mentioned Martha's Vineyard and you write about that island as kind of a microcosm of what we're seeing play out around the United States and around the world. Why do you describe it in that way?
Well, it's gone through an ecological evolution that's very similar to what's happened all along the East Coast. You know, it was forested before colonization, and then it was turned into mostly farmland and pasture land, and most of the trees were stripped out. And then in the 19th century, people started to live there and turn it into vacation homes, and you had nature reserves come in and let the forest come back, and you end up with an island that's actually perfect tick habitat. It's got this patchy forests, meadows, edge habitat, the kind of place that deer love to feed and love to wander. And you have a population, like much of America, that loves deer and loves being in this kind of wild place where they can watch these animals. That same transformation has happened across the country. The whole eastern seaboard, forests have come back from farms over the last 100, 150 years. The deer, meanwhile, have exploded. You know, we went from almost being an endangered species in this country at the turn of the last century to 36 million of them wandering the United States. And Martha's Vineyard has a huge population, has almost 5,000 deer in a small 87 square mile island. So it's got an especially intense deer population carrying all these ticks.
I do love the history of how this syndrome was identified, because it sounds like it was a real unlikely patchwork of stuff happening.
Yeah, I mean, I dug into this in my story partly because I think people have often thought of it as a kind of a novelty disease in the United States, but it's really been international. And one of the interesting things about the origins of its discovery was that it happened almost simultaneously in two places at once. I mean, really the earliest was in Australia with Cheryl Van Noonan, an allergist there, started to find people coming in with these allergic reactions in the late 90s, early 2000s. And she started to collect cases. And she was the first one who thought, wow, I think this is connected to tick bites, because she had done all these case studies with them and asked them questions. And she presented that information in 2007 at a conference. And people were like, you're nuts. This is crazy. Allergy to meat. So they didn't believe it. Meanwhile, in Virginia, Tom Platz Mills, an allergist and immunological researcher there, was doing some research on a cancer drug called cetuximab, which had done pretty well in early trials. But then when it was released in 2006, suddenly there were people getting terrible reactions. One person died while he was being infused with a drug in Arkansas. And they were like, what's going on? And then they noticed there's a strange pattern. People in the Northeast are not getting these reactions, are doing fine with it. And the people in the Southeast are getting them. And they started to think, well, what follows that pattern? So they had a guy on their staff who was just looking through the different possible allergens or other things that might be causing this. And he finally hit upon Rocky Mountain spotted fever was close. And then he thought, well, what would be even closer? And it turned out Lone Star ticks were a perfect match for the distribution of people having terrible reactions to cetuximab. Meanwhile, they'd found out that cetuximab, what was causing the reaction to that was to alpha-gal, to that sugar. That connection was made. And so for the first time, Platz Mills kind of connected these two dots that said, it's ticks, it's alpha-gal. And then he himself got bitten by a nest of 200 alpha-gal larvae.
As he's studying this, like literally.
As he's studying this. And you know, and he has the makings of this theory, but he doesn't have proof. And so as soon as he gets bitten, he rushes back to his lab at the University of Virginia, says, take my blood, has them measure antibody levels. Sure enough, they ratchet up. And then a couple months later, he's at a conference in London. He has a couple of lamb chops for dinner. And that night, he gets this terrible meat reaction. And he's actually kind of excited about it. He's like, oh, I've finally proven that this thing is...
excited, but now he's living with a meat allergy. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's...
but you know, he's a true researcher. I think that kind of trumps anything else.
It's amazing. Okay, so this cancer drug was actually mimicking what meat does and causing these kinds of reactions in people who had this syndrome that was about to be discovered.
Well, the cancer drug was created through mice. You know, it was kind of a transgenic process where they use mice and human genes to create this drug. And then it turned out that that also put alpha-gal into the drug.
Okay. And then people who got that drug were having the reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. And because it was infused directly into their bloodstream, it wasn't something you digest. They were having immediate reactions. And that's part of the problem with alpha-gal. There's alpha-gal and in lots of other drugs, like heparin, for instance, is made from pig intestines, you know, and it's a blood thinner that's used in many, many surgeries. And you get infused with that and you can have a terrible reaction in a moment's notice.
Well, I want to talk more about people who are living with this reality and also struggling to get clarity in a diagnosis. What other stories stand out and how this has shown up in people's lives, sometimes as just a mystery that they have trouble solving?
I'd been used to thinking about this in the East Coast and places like the Hamptons or Martha's Vineyard. It seemed a little bit like Lyme disease, which early on was like wealthy people in their country estates getting bitten and, you know, that kind of idea. Of course, it spread to much other populations after that. But it seemed like that was the case with AlphaGal. But in fact, if you think about people in Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, that's where the real epicenter of the disease is right now. It's their whole lifestyle that's affected. You know, it's not just that they get ticks when they go outside, but they can't hunt because that's going to put them at risk of getting tick bites. You know, the animals they raise, they can't raise them because the saliva from the animals or sometimes any other products in their skin can trigger the reaction. They can't eat the meat they grow. They can't drink the milk they grow. You know, it kind of gets at every aspect of that lifestyle and undercuts it.
Which can affect like local and regional economies, right? I mean, we're not just talking about people's lives, but when you start, you know, getting more and more people who can't eat the things that they're raising and growing, like, doesn't that have sort of an economic impact that we might be seeing more of as it spreads?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was interviewing folks in Oklahoma, they had two bills in the works. One was to just mandate AlphaGal reporting so they could get a handle on how many people had it and where they had it. The other was to actually outlaw the sale of lab-grown meat because they were afraid that this meat allergy was going to start pushing people toward lab-grown meats like Impossible Burger and stuff like that. It got through the House, as I understand it, but it got killed in the Senate, but it got pretty close.
And we should say animal products, like it's such a broad term. There are so many things that can trigger this reaction in people who have this syndrome that makes it, you know, even harder to live with. I mean, what other things should people be thinking about if they get this syndrome and are thinking about the things that they have to, you know, just get rid of in their lives?
Yeah, that's the thing that was really striking to me, was the realization that animal products are threaded through everything. I've been told that even in drywall sometimes there's animal products, there's stuff in the glues
drywall?
We use. I mean, I think it's rare, but there, you know, and there's things in, you know, certainly gelatin capsules for supplements. Huh. Some of the vitamins are made from pig organs. You get lanolin in skin creams. Toothpaste has beef products in it. Doritos have dairy stuff. And then you get into problems for people who want to go out to eat and cross-contamination, you know, like you order a piece of fish and it's cooked on a grill where that just had meat and it gets some AlphaGal on the fish, you know, so people are scared to go out and eat when they get this thing. And then finally, the real problem is you get in a car accident, you go to the hospital, they infuse you with heparin. You know, if a woman gets estrogen, that's made from horse's urine. You know, it's all these things. Antivenins, if you get bitten by a snake, are made with horse's blood. You know, it's just, we've used animals to create so many products, so it's just all over our lives.
I feel like anecdotally, I've become more curious because I feel like if I'm out to dinner with people or talking to friends, like more people these days are talking about allergies than ever before. And it was so interesting to me because you write about that there has been this broader rise in allergies in the United States, at least. Is AlphaGal part of that trend or what should we learn from it?
Definitely is. There was a paper by Tom Platz Mills, the guy who discovered the connection, called the allergy epidemic, you know, and it really has been a vast increase. And there are different theories for that. You know, there's the famous one is the hygiene hypothesis, which says that we're too clean and we're not building natural defenses. There's a thing called the old friends hypothesis, which kind of says that, you know, our gut biome is not what it should be. We used to have these bacteria and even parasites that would fight off, you know, foreign invaders or allergens. And then there's one called the epithelial barrier hypothesis, which says that like the chemicals we use in our environment are actually weakening the protective coating that is preventing these allergens from entering our body and our lungs and our skin. So there's all these hypotheses. And then on top of that, you have allergists who for a long time were giving bad advice. You know, they were saying, don't give your kids peanuts to eat, you know, right. That's a famous one. And of course, it turns out that actually the gut is a really good way of getting used to allergens and it can really mediate that stuff really well. So for all these different reasons, we were getting more and more allergies. And at the same time, ticks are spreading and we're going into tick territory. And ticks, when they bite you, they tend to increase your antibodies to all kinds of allergies at the same time. So it's a kind of a perfect storm of environment and habit and climate and behavior all at the same time.
Well, and I guess in that regard, I keep coming back to this question, like why at this level and why now? And, you know, you've talked about the our environment is changing. The climate is changing. Deers are moving into places where they haven't been in the past. And our bodies have changed over time in terms of susceptibility to allergies. But like, there's a core truth here. Like, we've been eating meat for thousands of years and getting bitten by ticks for thousands of years. So why this now?
Yeah, I ask that question to every researcher I talk to, and nobody could really say.
Really? Again, no clear answer.
No, I mean, it's this mosaic of things, circumstantial things that point to why it would happen. But, you know, the odd thing is that it's not just the Lone Star tick in the United States, right? There's a different tick on every continent that carries this castor bean tick in Europe. You know, you got the bont tick in South Africa. And somehow in all these places, people became aware of this syndrome in roughly the same era. I mean, even on what I was just saying, you think, well, if hygiene is a problem, then you would think in a place that is not hygienic, they wouldn't have this problem. But, you know, a lot of the most severe cases are in South Africa and in townships and shantytowns and places that have dirt floors and animals in the home. So they're getting it too. So it can't just be that. So who knows? Is it an environmental thing? Is it some tick-borne disease or some virus within the ticks that have spread among different tick populations? We just don't know that exactly yet.
Let's talk about what can be done about this. I mean, there was this one clinical trial that that I was fascinated by. They were trying to use a gene-edited alpha-gal-free pig. The results turned out to be kind of shocking.
Well, it's an interesting story because the GalSafe pig was not developed for alpha-gal. It was developed for xenotransplantation, for people who want to get pig organs and transplant them into humans if they need a kidney or, you know. And then when alpha-gal came around, they suddenly realized, oh, wow, we actually have a pig. Because alpha-gal was the first thing they tried to get rid of because they knew that would cause a reaction in people who got a pig organ. So it was the first thing they tried to get rid of. And then they suddenly realized, oh, wow, we have a pig around that doesn't have alpha-gal in its meat. The company, Revivicor, now owned by United Therapeutics, they let one farm, Amaru Hills Farm in Virginia, sell these pigs to people with alpha-gal. And it's hugely popular. All these, you know, you got an alpha-gal chat groups on Facebook and so forth. Everybody wants this meat because they haven't had pork in a long time. They really want to get it back. And it tastes just like perfectly normal pork. I actually went to Virginia, visited this facility where they breed these pigs. And later on, I ate some of this alpha-gal meat. And that's getting to your question. They did the first really double-blind clinical trial where they fed patients who had alpha-gal, as far as they knew. And neither the researchers nor the patients knew whether it was real pork or whether it was the alpha-gal-free pork. And then they would see what the reactions were. And everybody thought, well, this is going to be a slam dunk. We've done kind of non-double-blind trials before that show that people had reactions to real pork. But the results were pretty equivocal. I mean, they did get more reactions and some more severe reactions to the regular pork than the gal-free pork. But there were cases where the real pork didn't cause a reaction and cases where the gal-free pork did cause a reaction. So it kind of gets at the mystery of allergic reactions. It gets back to that question of why do some people with lots of antibodies have reactions, others don't. What else is triggering this thing? As I said earlier, you know, there's this idea that there must be a cofactor of some kind in the saliva. We don't know what that cofactor is. And there's research looking for vaccines that would react to a bite and would attack whatever is in the saliva that's helping these allergens of all kinds get amplified by tick bites. There's research into that. There's research into different, you know, vaccines you might be able to give deer that would make the ticks that bite them fall off and not reach maturity so they couldn't breed. I mean, part of the big problem with ticks is just how many eggs they lay. I mean, the Lone Star tick, one female can lay up to 10,000 eggs, you know.
Oh, wow.
So just even if you decrease the number, you're still going to have a lot of ticks.
I mean, there is a biologist on Martha's Vineyard who I know told you that the only real solution to this might be to dramatically reduce or kill off the deer population. Is that viable?
Well, it's definitely viable on Martha's Vineyard. I mean, it's
small enough, you know, community. Yeah.
I mean, it's you have this kind of isolated thing. I mean, deer can swim between islands, so it's not, you know, you can't do it potentially forever, but you can. I mean, their plan is to go down from 4,000, 5,000 deer to 1,500 or something like that. reduce it by 70%. And you can do that on a Martha's Vineyard. And it's interesting because, I mean, I've been environmental and science writer for 40 years. And when I first came into this profession, I heard debates about what do we do about the overpopulated deer. And back then it was animal rights activists and nature lovers versus ecologists in many cases. And it's still going on, but it felt like when I was in Martha's Vineyard, people had reached that point of enough is enough. You know, they were saying, look, this is an existential crisis for us. People don't want to come to this island anymore, or won't if they know that they are at risk of getting this syndrome. They won't want to bring their grandchildren or meet their grandparents. You know, this can really kill our economy. And so finally, there was this real sense of we're going to do this thing now. Whether that would work in other places is a real question. You know, it's a much bigger scale. You can definitely reduce the deer population. People say there's other things you could do, prescribed burning. You know, there's lots of kind of patchwork things you can do. But to really get to the point we were at the turn of the 19th century, where we had very few deer, that would, I think there would be a lot of people opposed to that, not just nature lovers at that point, but hunters at some point. They're happy to have extended hunting seasons, but if we really got down to 1 million deer instead of 36 million deer, I think there'd be huge protests before we got to that point.
What is your advice for people out there who don't want to get this thing, but do enjoy nature and live in a part of the country maybe where these things exist?
I mean, the easiest thing is certainly tick checks, being very careful about checking for ticks after in these kind of places. The next step up, which is a little safer, is using DEET and things like that that can deter ticks to some degree, they sprays. But the really safe thing to do is to, if you're going to go hiking in places like this, if you're going to spend a lot of time outdoors, you wear clothing kind of impregnated with permethrin, which is an insecticide. It seems to be perfectly safe for humans, but it definitely kills ticks. I mean, they can't crawl more than a few inches over pants with that in or socks with that in it without getting poisoned and dying. So, you know, a lot of the people I knew in Martha's Vineyard who spent a lot of time outdoors, they had socks, pants, shirts, all soaked with permethrin, and wore those pretty religiously when they were out in the woods.
And the tick check, just to make sure I understand, like if you catch a tick fairly quickly, that means hopefully they didn't have enough time to infect you?
Yeah, certainly if they're crawling on you, they haven't done it. If they've latched on, but they haven't been on very long, they may not have infused your blood yet. You know, they may not have punctured you deeply enough or gotten it into you. So yeah, that's the idea, is get them as quickly as you can.
How bad could this get? How serious could a thing could we be facing here?
I mean, the numbers really are skyrocketing across the country, it seems like. So it's definitely, I think, going to become more and more prevalent. The question is, like, how serious is it? You know, again, you can avoid ticks. You can avoid red meat and dairy. If you're good at that, you can make the thing go away. There are things like Xolair available to treat it. So we can learn to live with it. The terrible thing is that by learning to live with it, we have to avoid some of the most beautiful places in our country and on our planet and change our lifestyles in a way that it is really sad. I mean, even for me, when I was reporting this piece, I was constantly a little paranoid everywhere I went. I was walking through these beautiful woods in North Carolina, interviewing a gastroenterologist, and I was constantly thinking, oh, damn, I don't want to brush against that bush. I don't want to put my feet through that grass on the edge of the path. You know, there's this constant sense of threat around you, mild threat, but a real threat. And that's hard to live with.
Thank you so much for this. I learned a ton and really appreciate all of your knowledge and reportings. This is important stuff, so I'm really appreciative.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We will include a link to The Tick That Hunts Down Its Hosts, Including Us, by Burkhard Bilger for The New Yorker on our show notes page. And every weekend, you can find new episodes of Apple News and Conversation in the Apple News app. Just tap on the audio tab, those little headphones at the bottom, to find it.